Hi, I'm Joe Moore, Morgan Stanley Semiconductor team. Very happy to have with me today from Applied Materials, Daniel Derns, Chief Financial Officer, and Michael Sullivan, Head of Investor Relations. So to start out, you guys have had a really good couple of years, really more years than that, but the couple of years have been particularly good. And I think if you sort of frame that contextually coming out of a merger that didn't work, there's always going to be questions about execution, and yet you've really kind of hit on all cylinders and had a couple of really good years, not just in the cycle, but relative to the cycle as well. So maybe you can just talk a little bit about what's driving that strong execution at Applied and, what are the big picture focus areas going forward, and then we can get into the detail.
Sure, absolutely. So company did a great job on the back end of the merger that ran into a regulatory hurdle, staying focused on the strategy and execution, which is a real testament to Gary and the team. I would say at the core of the company is a very broad and deep footprint across an entire product portfolio of making semiconductors. And the strategy of seeing inflections before others and bringing innovations to market before others. An example of that is the transition from planar NAND to 3D NAND, and bringing that innovation to market to intercept that opportunity has served the company really well. A couple more that we're focused on, increasingly adopting logic-like processes inside the DRAM device, or multi-patterning to shrink and increase the density of logic devices and DRAM devices. And I think you'll see an inspection and process control, a pending inflection on things like e-beam inspection, which again I think will serve the company really well. So the company's done a fantastic job staying focused and driving market share. I think the last thing is right on the back end of that decision by the regulatory authority, the company authorized about a $3 billion share repurchase. I think it was over a three-year period. They did it all in 1 year. They bought about 170 million shares between $17 and $20, and it's created a lot of value for the company. And I would say on a go-forward basis, we're going to be really focused on capital allocation and continuing to make smart decisions about how we get excess capital back in the hands of shareholders to continue to drive value.
Yeah, that was a good purchase. I guess talking a little bit about the environment, you talked on the most recent earnings call about a two-year wafer fab equipment number of about $100 billion, which is up from the mid-90s that you talked about at the analyst day and late last year. I guess given that 2018 looks like it's in the low 50s, I mean, that implies decline. So sort of two questions it raises. One, how do you feel about low 50s? You know, in the context of 2 years ago, you were thinking kind of mid-30s. It's a lot bigger. As you plan your business, are you thinking that this is the new run rate, higher than the run rate? I mean, at the end, I'll say last year you talked about mid-40s. Just give us a sense for where you see the bigger picture long term.
Yeah, so we feel really good about 50s as a run rate, being driven by diversification of end market demand drivers. Capital intensity is up across the board, and customers are really profitable. They're spending a lot of money, but they're increasing their profitability at a faster rate than they're increasing their spend dollars. So their profitability is up dramatically, and capacity expansion, capacity investments are demand-led. So there's a lot of health in terms of strength of the end markets and where we find ourselves today. So we're really encouraged by what we see.
Okay, and then I guess the $100 billion, at least to me, looking if low 50s this year, it would imply a small decline into next year. Is that the right way to think of it? And obviously you've articulated a path to get to over $5 in earnings on a smaller number than that, and we'll get to that. But, is that the right context to think about this, that 19 is probably down a little bit?
I think it's too early to call the profile. I think what we're sending is a message that says we see a lot of strength in the current year, 2018, and all leading indicators of the business and fundamentals going into 19 are strong as well. And so we don't see a hard reset in our markets in 2019. And again, we're encouraged by the diversification of our end market drivers, capital intensity up across the board, all device types, and we're seeing broad-based strength in our end markets, and we see that continuing into 2019. Too early to call the profile of it.
Yeah.
We're just really encouraged by the strength we see across the board.
Okay, makes sense. Maybe we could talk about the end markets a little bit. You know, the segments within semiconductor wafer fab equipment. Looking at NAND, it's interesting because it was higher than my expectations last year from a spending standpoint, higher than your expectations. But it seems like a pretty consistent message that the supply picture hasn't really changed. So can you talk about that dynamics? Was the industry legitimately sort of surprised by the capital intensity of these next generation NAND transitions? And you know, just a little bit of context on how that CapEx can be so good without extra supply.
Yeah. So, again, we see capital intensity across all device types being up. NAND is one specific category. I think in 2017, we saw 35 to 40% bit supply growth, probably saw 40 to 45% bit demand growth, so underserving a bit of that market, and we see a bit more balance into 2018. We ended 2017 with 1.5 million wafer starts per month of installed capacity in the industry, and about half of that is planar, half of that is 3D NAND. You'll see the 3D NAND penetration going to about two-thirds, 70% of the overall install base exiting 2018. So we still see a couple years of legs on that penetration. But as we think about capital intensity and the ability to drive bit growth with incremental spend, there's a really important dynamic as we go vertical in the NAND structures. You put 1.25 billion of capital in place inside a factory to drive 32 layers of production. Then you invest another 1.25 billion and you go from 32 layers to 64 layers, and that's a 2x increase, 100% increase in bit output. What happens when you make the next 1.25 billion of investment? You go from 64 layers to 96 layers, and that's not a 2x increase, that's a 50% increase. And then you spend the next $1.25 billion, and you go from 96 layers to 128 layers, and you don't get a 50% increase, you get a 33% increase. So driving bit growth in the vertical world is harder and more expensive. And so as we think about 40 to 45% bit demand growth in storage for the foreseeable future, driving that incremental growth is more expensive. Driving that incremental growth is more complex and more challenging for our customers. So we really like the way that market is shaping up and the tailwind that that provides us going forward, given what we see happening in end markets.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I guess you guys gave a fairly detailed technology presentation last year at SEMICON about the vertical scaling, adding to the layer count and other methodologies for adding to 3D gigabits per wafer. And I guess the really, I'm not a technologist myself in this area, but the really exciting thing is just how much of the wafer fab equipment that Applied captures when you do that layer count transition. Mm-hmm. That even if the WFE number doesn't grow, it still seems like you guys have a growing opportunity. You know, is there a visibility on how much scaling there is to go and how much of a path there is where you're sort of purely adding layer count to 3D?
Sure. So, you know, one way to think about it is if you went back in time and looked at NAND in the 2D era, you know, every time you did a shrink, it would be classic Moore's law, right? Every couple of years, doubling the bits more or less. And it was a geometric progression. And now we're not getting that, right? We're getting more of a linear projection growth the way Dan described. So what are the customers trying to do? There's a few different vectors that we described at a technology event that we had back in July with some of our PhDs. And one of the vectors is to try to keep growing how many layers you deposit and then etch to create the structures. So we went from 30 to 64. People are working on 96 now. And it remains to be seen how far people can take that with a single pass, right? But then the next trick is what you could do is you could decide, okay, what if I'm really good at depositing, let's say, just arbitrarily 48 of those? I'll stop there, and then I'll build a new stack of 48 on top of that, and I can get my 96 that way. and maybe I can do that not once, but twice or you know, some number of times. So that's string stacking people will talk about.
Yeah.
So that's another vector. The other vector is there are some other ways that you can try to laterally shrink what's going on. And so, for example, if you could think of a 3D NAND device, you've got the memory cells, and then a lot of times around the memory cells, you'll have some periphery logic, the I.O. You could think of that as being like a parking lot surrounding a high-rise building. Well, that's wasted space. Why don't you take that periphery, put it underneath the high-rise, and then you have a you know something that laterally is narrower.
Mm-hmm.
So that technique is happening. And then there's another technique, which is all of the layers that you build, 48, 96, they all need to be interconnected. And so if you look at these things, you've probably seen the diagrams, they look a little bit like a Mayan temple where every layer has a step to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead of just building all of those staircases all the way out, you can start to take that staircase and wrap it around the building, sort of like the fire escape on a high rise, right, how it wraps around. So all of those techniques are right now in play, and the customers are playing with all of those various things because the classic Moore's Law, it's just not available.
Yeah. Okay, great. I mean, I don't want to go too far in the weeds on this stuff, but I mean, it certainly is an important indicator that you'll still have the tailwind at your back that you've had.
Yeah, and the one point to make there is so that when you're doing these things, what happens is, you know, you can think about, well, what do we get when customers add bits?
Yeah.
You know, people talk about, well, when you're doing a greenfield factory, you know, maybe you get a certain percent of the market. If you're doing a 2D to 3D conversion, what do you get? When you go 3D to 3D, what do you get? And it turns out that regardless of how the customer chooses to deploy those bits, the spending with us is relatively the same.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is if you, for example, are just going to adding layers, what you're probably doing is you're buying a lot of CVD, you're buying a lot of etch equipment, and if you're doing string stacking, you're buying a whole lot of polishing equipment, CMP. Those are all markets where we're very well positioned, and so we tend to grow share as customers grow layers.
Great. Thank you. So you talked about NAND growing, I think, this year. DRAM, on the other hand, I mean, my view is that DRAM actually sort of underspent in 2017. If you look at the numbers, we're well below 2015 levels. I guess it seems like that's changing quickly, you know, given the strength that you and others have seen in the first half of the year for DRAM. So maybe just help us level set. I mean, could we see a year, the numbers we've just sort of heard from companies collectively sort of up 40% this year for DRAM wafer fab equipment. You know, is that the right kind of qualitative, you know, ballpark to be in, and is that something that we should be worried about in terms of incremental supply in 2019 for DRAM?
Yeah, so we're really encouraged by what we see in DRAM for a couple reasons. One is you touched on the overall strength of the end markets. It is harder to drive bit growth from just shrinks. The shrinks are becoming harder and they're yielding less bit growth, and so you're seeing incremental greenfield adds as you execute a shrink. It's more process step intensive. The wafers out of a given size fab go down, and so you add greenfield capacity to make up for the lost wafers and drive bit growth that way. And the industry has been very disciplined for probably since 2011. You've consolidated to three primary customers, 1.1 million wafer starts per month consistently out from the DRAM industry. And again, they're executing shrinks and incremental greenfield to keep your bit supply in line with bit demand. I think this is the year you probably see, again, shrinks are becoming harder, yielding less growth, and so you'll probably see a slight uptick in the wafer starts per month out to get your 20% bit supply growth, which is fantastic for us. The other thing I see in this industry that I'm really encouraged by, and this is an applied materials specific comment, is we're increasingly seeing logic-like processes adopted by the memory providers, DRAM providers. The read-write speed, the I.O. speed of the memory device is increasingly important to take advantage of the processor speeds that it's married to. And we're seeing our leadership businesses, things where we have over 50% market share, which were traditionally foundry and logic type processes, things like PVD and EPI and CMP and thermals, implant. These are areas where we're very heavy from a foundry adoption standpoint, increasingly adopted in places like DRAM. It's one of the reasons why We see our leadership businesses growing at a 14% compound rate over the last 4 years. And these leadership businesses, which used to be primarily foundry logic, are up 4x over that same four-year period in the memory space. So we like the strength of the end market, and we like the processes that are increasingly being adopted, which really plays to our strength as a company.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, great. And then I guess looking at the logic and foundry side, I mean, you guys had a whole segment of your analyst day focused on kind of AI and some of the incremental drivers there. Can you just talk a little bit about that? And I guess in particular, you know, it's not always intuitive that AI is sort of moving to 7 nanometer, 5 nanometer as quickly as kind of what you guys have talked to me about. So maybe just talk a little bit about those growth dynamics.
So we see macro trends, things like artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, autonomous driving, the data economy. My term for it is chip enablement of the physical infrastructure, driving enhanced asset utilization. I think we're on the cusp of a multi-year, non-discretionary investment cycle by some of the largest companies in the largest industries. If we go back in time to when compute first entered the corporate environment, you invested in mainframes. You invested in departmental compute, mini computers. You put computers on the desktop. There was a multi-year non-discretionary investment cycle that triggered that was at the core of a company's competitiveness. If you made the investment, you were able to maintain competitiveness. If you didn't, you very quickly fell off that competitiveness roadmap and the business suffered. I think we're on the cusp of the next non-discretionary investment cycle that strikes right at the core of companies' competitiveness, and I think it's going to be much larger than the prior example. So again, we think these trends are real. We're in the early stages, probably the first inning of a multi-year non-discretionary investment cycle, and again, we're just really encouraged by what we see across all device types. We see it in memory. We see it on the storage side. We see it on the DRAM side. We see it in logic. We see it in foundry. It's broad-based strength across our end markets.
Okay, great. It sounds compelling. I guess, can we switch a little bit to talk about geographies, and in particular China? There's been a lot of focus just in the last couple months about China, you know, demonstrating internal NAND capability, sovereign NAND capability, as well as DRAM. There's even been press articles about customers agreeing to use the product that hasn't been even, you know, the factories haven't even built yet. It's a focus for an important reason, is that China has made it clear that from a sovereign standpoint, they want control of the supply chain. And I think if you look in the context of $110 billion in memory investment in the last 5 years, it's going to be very expensive to be relevant in that supply chain. So, you know, and I think you guys have talked about a relatively small amount of spending from the China sovereigns thus far, but maybe just update us on your thinking there.
I think that's right. I would characterize what we see in China as being customers having realistic expectations and very pragmatic in their deployment of capacity. In 2017, we saw modest spend, and the international providers, the multinationals, were larger than the domestic providers. I think we see a bit of the same thing in 2018, but maybe a bit more balanced in terms of the spend. And as we go forward for the next several years, I think we see strong balance in the spend between domestic providers and the multinationals. And when we look at it, a lot of investments are going in around pilot lines and technology development and building out the human capital ecosystem. So again, the expectations are realistic. They're going to measure this progress over a very long period of time. I think you measure progress in this industry in decades. This is not the LED business. This is not the solar business where you buy equipment and you're up and running and manufacturing. Know-how is so critical in this industry, and this stuff is hard. You'll measure progress in decades. So we see disciplined spending. We see realistic expectations. We see pilot lines, technology development. And as capacity comes in, We see it on lagging edge geometry, foundry, and memory. So I don't think China is going to be a meaningful player on the leading edge of memory or foundry anytime soon. And so it looks like they're taking a high quality, measured approach to building out this ecosystem, this infrastructure, this capacity. And I think that bodes really, really well for the long run of their semiconductor industry.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's clear that there's not a lot of incremental supply coming in, you know, in the sort of intermediate time frame. But I guess there are buildings, you know, large shells that are in place. They've hired management teams that come from industry that know what they're doing. So it does feel like at some point a switch turns on and there's quite a bit more spending. And I doubt we're here in 3 years and that hasn't become a big area of growth for you guys. I mean, what, anything in that you disagree with, I guess?
No, I think at some point you'll see meaningful adds from a capacity standpoint. But again, when you think about the lagging edge, if you were to talk to us a couple years ago, we would have taken a point of view that 28 nanometer, and included in our definition of 28 is 32 and 22 FDSOI. We group it all together, collectively label it 28. We would have said 330,000 wafer starts a month, peak capacity in the industry. If you'd have talked to us about three, four quarters ago, we would have said 400,000 wafer starts per month of peak capacity. And today we see that peak capacity being 500,000 wafer starts a month. Part of that different view on where the peak capacity of that really important node from an industry standpoint is we see more investment going in on the lagging edge over time. From 2011 to 2015, in foundry, you saw 80% of the spend on the leading edge, 20% on the lagging edge. Starting in 2015 up through 2018, that 80-20 split is now 60-40. So within foundry, you see two submarkets developing. Part of what we see going on in China is building out that lagging edge infrastructure. It's going to be important for edge compute devices.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's low-end smartphones today that don't have the content that they ultimately want to have. And if you can bring some devices to market at a lower price point, I think you create demand where there isn't any today. And so again, we really like the way this is shaping up, and I think that's one of the reasons why we see things 28 nanometers growing in size over time, to satisfy some of the edge compute demand.
Yeah. Okay. Makes a lot of sense. Maybe talk about some of your other businesses, starting with display. 13% of sales last year, growing faster than the company overall. There's been some concern around OLED adoption around, you know, the Apple flagship phone. Seems like from your call that you haven't seen any change. You're still looking at 30% plus type of growth this year. Maybe just talk a little bit about where that growth is coming from.
Yeah. So, as we take a look at OLED technology, I think it's important to note it is a cost-competitive, lower-cost technology versus an LCD screen because you lose the backlight, you lose the liquid crystal layer, and you lose the color filter. And so when you get more capacity online that's producing at a reasonably efficient output, we think the ASP of those screens more reflects the cost, and you get proliferation throughout the handset. So we're still really encouraged by what we see. There's no material change to our overall display forecast. As we break it down by device type, TV and handset, over our forecast window, there's no material change to either device type. And as we narrow it down to 2018, there's no material change to our outlook for our business, and we're still expecting greater than 30% growth. So we're really encouraged by what we see in the display market. And 2018 is a really important year for us. And we've been signaling this now for quite some time. In 2017, two-thirds of our business was the handset, one-third was TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2018, that's now more balanced, 50-50. And in 2017, in the handset, significantly greater than 50% of our business was with one customer. And in 2018, that's much more diversified, where we've got a total of 10 customers now on the handset. So not only do we have device type diversification in 2018, but the customers within the handset are significantly more diversified this year than they've been historically. So we feel really good about this business, and we feel great about the progress we're making diversifying this business over time.
Okay, great. And I guess the strength that's implicit in that in the TV side, can you talk a little bit about that, the Gen 10?
So we think what's happening on the TV side is we're tracking 13 Gen 10.5 factories that are being built between now and 2021. And the analogy I like to draw is much like a wafer size transition in semiconductors, going from 200 millimeter to 300 millimeter wafers. There are companies that made that investment and were cost competitive, and there are companies that didn't make that transition, lost their cost competitiveness, and ceded big parts of the market in five years. You see a similar substrate size transition happening in TV. A Gen 8.5 factory can do 3 65-inch TVs. A Gen 10.5 factory can do 8 65-inch TVs on a single substrate or 6 75-inch TVs. And so those customers want to be in the display business 5 years from now. And they understand that they need to navigate this substrate transition so they can maintain cost competitiveness out into the future. And so what we really see in that market for the next several years is a transition in substrate necessitating investment, driving cost competitiveness over the long run. And we think those plans remain intact. Those factories get built. It's going to be a good business for us for the next several years.
Okay, great. And then on your services business, which is now just over 20% of sales, you gave growth targets for that on a three-year basis, sort of showing healthy double-digit growth each year. And I guess, can you talk a little about what's driving that growth? And then in particular, you know, how sensitive do you see the growth in your services business to the underlying WFE number? There's some skepticism as to if WFE declines, that services will decelerate as well. Can you just talk about that?
So the good thing about our services business is we've got it on a strong growth trajectory. At our analyst day a few months ago, we talked about it outgrowing our semiconductor systems business 2-to-1. We think we can grow our services business at a 15% compound rate, and our semiconductor systems business will grow at a 7% compound rate, so 2-to-1. And as we disaggregate those drivers of growth, I think we start with install base. Applied has the largest install base in the industry. In 2013, we had about 25,000 tools across the globe. Today, that's 38,000. And even in a downturn, our install base will grow. People are going to continue to buy equipment, and that install base will grow. So we feel really good about that component of the growth driver going forward, even in a downturn. The second leg of growth for that business is our world is becoming more complex. It's harder to manufacture some of the things that we talked about in this discussion. And when we look at a 300-millimeter tool, the service opportunity on a 300-millimeter tool is 4x, four times what it was on a 200-millimeter tool. So as the industry progresses, complexity increases, that's going to accrue benefits to us. I think the third leg of the growth trajectory is tools under service agreement. Again, in this increasingly complex world, we're getting asked by customers more and more to pull their actual ramp closer to a theoretical ramp curve and to pull their steady state yields closer to entitlement yields. It's area under the curve. It's an economic return on their investment on that tool. So they win because they get a higher return on their investment. We win because we get to share in the upside, economic upside that we create. We know our tools really well, and we cannot, in many ways, get them to perform better than some of our customers. The opportunity, the service opportunity on a tool under a service agreement is 10x. Parts and labor model. And so again, that's the third leg of component, the increasing complexity of the process technology, the very narrow process windows our customers are increasingly dealing with, serve this business really well. So we feel good about the business. We feel good about it outgrowing our semi business. and feel good about it outgrowing our end markets over time. And so we're really encouraged by what we see there.
Okay, great. So I just have one more question and open to the audience. You know, obviously, I mean, your multiple to me reflects concerns about cyclicality in the business. Some of your customers' multiples are even lower. So, you know, there have been historically cycles, and there likely will be again. Can you talk a little bit about the downside scenarios for Applied? That if we did go through a downturn, you know, what does that look like? It can be hard to talk about that when things are good, but how are you thinking about that, and how should we think about Applied's ability to sort of maximize earnings in a trough scenario?
So it's a really good question, Joe. Our view, as we said on our last earnings call, is we see strength in our leading indicators into 2019. Our fundamentals look good, so our view is not a downturn.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019. But if we found ourselves in an unexpected situation, we obviously model lots of scenarios to make sure we can be nimble and disciplined when, if and when we encounter that situation. And so one of the scenarios we model, let's say it's a $40 billion WFE in 2019, and we advertised at our Analyst Day a few months ago that we would be at a 26.5% market share in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2019, we'll be one click short of that. So let's say 25% market share, $40 billion WFE, 25% market share. We've got a services business that probably won't grow 15% in a year like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be up a bit. And we've got a strong display business. When you put all of that together, we're gonna be well north of $16 billion from a revenue standpoint. Flowing that through will be around 28% operating margin. And so from an EPS production standpoint, we'll be nicely north of where we were in 2017, which was the all-time high for the company. And so we feel good about our ability to withstand a downturn. Again, it's not our likely scenario, but if that's the scenario we find ourselves in, I think we're prepared to manage the business and produce strong results for investors.
Yeah. All right. That's a compelling view. All right, let me see if there's any questions from the audience. In the middle.
Regarding your industry optimism, how do you reflect on that 10% of the wafer starts at Taiwan Semi is from cryptocurrency this quarter?
I'm sorry.
I didn't quite understand it.
Yeah, sorry, we couldn't hear the question.
So, you have a very great industry optimism, but I was just, how are you reflecting on that Taiwan Semi is having 10% of the wafer starts to cryptocurrency this quarter?
Oh, the cryptocurrency effect at TSMC.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna let TSMC talk about their business. Clearly, there's some drive of that leading-edge capacity driven by that. It's not to the point where 10% of their leading edge is less than, I think it's 1% of the overall semiconductor revenue. So it's an impact, but it's not a substantive impact that's gonna drive meaningful equipment sales anytime soon. So it's a nice contributor, but we see it as more a footnote now on the level of activity it drives for our business. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out over time. But I don't wanna get into too much about how TSMC messages their business.
I have a quick question on your display business. So if you could just talk about the existing competitive position you have in that, in that area of your business. Maybe it's not as appreciated as it should be, and you've talked about your SAM expansion from 15% to about 40%. If you can just help remind us the new areas you're targeting and,
Sure.
When we should see those hitting the model.
Yeah, so the display business. So, we got into that business in the 1990s, and what happened is that we had customers that were interested in getting into that industry and didn't have some of the key technologies. And we had those technologies on silicon wafers, and we needed to learn how to transfer that to glass substrates. And so we started with CVD, chemical vapor deposition, and that's a key technology, and to this day, we're the highest share company in CVD, whether it's on a Gen 6, which is for, you know, cell phones, smartphones, or if it's on a Gen 10.5, the new technology, where the substrates are as big as a two-car garage door, okay? So we can deposit uniformly over that surface. There's another form of deposition called PVD, which is depositing metals, And we're large in that space. We're a leader, but it's not as high as our CVD position. And then there are some other areas where we have gotten into the OLED area. OLED is depositing very delicate films on Gen 6 or Gen 6 half cut. Those films need to be encapsulated because any oxygen or hydrogen on them will ruin the device. And so what we do is in vacuum, we actually use our CVD technology to encapsulate it. There's another step from another company, and then there's a third step, which is, again, our CVD. And that business for us is quite large and very successful. We have a nice leadership position there as well. The second part of your question was, what about new products? What about further products? And that is an interesting area because we do think that, you know, right now the display industry is at high levels, but, you know, it will probably go through cycles as it has in its long history. If by the next time that happens, we have some new products, well, we'll be able to weather better than the average company in that space. So today, we only compete for 15% of display equipment spending. Our goal over the next few years is to be competing for 40% of that spend. So that's a big increase in served addressable market. We have several new products in the pipeline. A number of them are alpha tools that are in customers' hands where we're getting good engineering feedback. And what we look forward to doing at a future event is actually pulling the trigger and letting you know what we've done, because we're coming out with some new architectures that are radically different from what anybody else is doing today, and that's our focus. So we're not going at existing competitors with me too products. We're going for something that's disruptive and new, and we've got a few of those, and look forward to sharing those with you as soon as we can.
Great, and on that note, we'll wrap up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.